on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Joined by Lance Meadow. I am John Schmelk with you for the next 1 hour to talk some Giants football. We continue to react to the Giants' big 30-27 comeback victory against the San Francisco 49ers. The Giants' first such comeback fourth quarter win since the Falcons game of last year. They now go to 3-2. They're in first place in the NFC East. Also, if you like, we can take a look ahead to the Philadelphia Eagles. We're very familiar with the Eagles. We've talked to Dave Spadaro a bunch of times this offseason. We got a pretty good feel for how they're playing. I saw some interesting numbers this morning as I was doing some work on the Eagles, so we can get to that as well. But Lance, still a very happy Quest Diagnostics Performance Center today as the Giants are 3-2. They're in first place, and after an 0-2 start with two late, pretty brutal losses with how they went down, it's got to be a pretty good feeling to be in first place come week five.
Well, you're still roaming the hallways here at Quest Diagnostic Center, so we should preface that before we say that it's truly a happy and jolly environment here. But I do agree
with you. I'm happy to go home.
From a team perspective.
I'm good with that.
Yes. Well, hey, we can continue the show. But anyway, from a team perspective, yes, I think that considering how the team has turned things around after that 0-2 start, and what was significant about that 0-2 start is just two losses in such heartbreaking fashion, and then the win that they're coming off of, John, is the complete opposite. It's a total 180 in which they were able to get the ball last, they were able to drive down the field, and they were able to get that late touchdown. So I think from a mental standpoint, I mean, this victory was extremely significant. But remember, now you're entering a stretch where you get to separate the men from the boys because you got the Eagles and the Cowboys, the next two contests, divisional games, it goes without saying, are of utmost importance compared to the rest of the schedule. And, you know, this is an opportunity now to take the momentum that you have off of this three-game winning streak, John, and not only continue to build off of that, but also separate yourself from these other divisional foes.
Absolutely. And a couple things I want to touch on. You had a chance to react to the game with Eagles yesterday. I did not. So just a couple things to note that I noticed in the game. I know his numbers weren't off the charts. Rashad Jennings, just 11 catches, 46 yards, 4 yards a carry, 4.2 if you want to be specific, 4 catches, 21 yards. Those numbers might not jump off the page, Lance, but to me, he had a couple very essential third down conversions for the Giants in a game where they went 9 of 14 on third down, a big reason they're able to have more than 500 yards of total offense. And every time he takes contact, he seems to be able to fall forward and get that extra yard or two to get the first down necessary. And he basically kept Andre Williams stapled to the bench, who just had 3 carries in this game. And I thought Rashad Jennings played another excellent football game a week after it was his big play, which helped get the Giants the victory against Buffalo.
Well, it wasn't necessarily a huge big play that turned this game around. As you mentioned, John, it was more of a piecemeal between Rashad Jennings and Shane Vereen. I think the both of them, the combination of what they did on the ground, John, on top of what they did as receivers. Remember, they combined for 12 catches, which was extremely significant, and they also combined for over 100 receiving yards. So, you know, you look at the rushing numbers and you say, okay, 84 rushing yards, 4 yards per carry, which is not terrible in terms of the yards per carry, but to me what's more impressive is the fact that you had two receivers who were mostly getting 5 or 6 yard passes that turned that into over 100 yards of production. That, to me, is an extension of the running game. So that's why, you know, when people look at the running numbers, they don't jump off the page right now, John, but you have to take into consideration all of these receptions on top of that.
No question about it. Another thing I want to talk about is I mentioned this to Bob Papa this morning during one of his breaks on a Sirius show. We were chatting about it. And to me, a lot of this, Lance, comes down to just someone making a really good play at the end of the game. And we saw it against the Bills. Rashad Jennings made the big play. We saw it against the 49ers. Larry Donnell made a very difficult catch in the end zone to win the ball game. And frankly, it's not just the plays that you make. It's also the plays that you don't make. Landon Collins had the chance to get that interception in the end zone on the Niners. Not final possession, but the possession before that, dropped the interception in the end zone. That would have gone a long way to sealing that victory. On the other side, the 49ers had a chance to seal the victory themselves, but their safety couldn't get his arms underneath the football and couldn't come up with the interception. And Papa was telling me, Bill Parcells used to say, there were 5 or 6 plays a game usually where they were turning point plays in a game, and they would make a game flow either towards one team or to the other. And it's the responsibility of the players to go out and make those plays when they're presented with the opportunity. And the great players make them more often than not. That's why having great players obviously is going to help you win a lot of games. And other players do it less consistently. And, for example, Larry Donnell. What did we talk about all last week when everyone was calling in trying to bench the guy? You're like, look, you know he's capable of making plays like the one he made to win the game. He just has to do it more consistently, and the game against the Niners happened to be one of his better ones.
And on top of that, we'll tie too. I think the tight ends as a group, John, made plays. I mean, that was a big theme out of this contest. But, you know, what you were hitting on, there were two instances for both sides. The Niners dropped two interceptions in the game. And then the Giants, you mentioned Landon Collins, also DRC knocks the ball out of Colin Kaepernick on an 8-yard rush. The ball is bouncing around on the ground, and Kaepernick happens to fall on that. So, you know, think about it. If the Giants recover that fumble, if the Giants hold on to that interception, you know, who knows if the Niners even get into the end zone two times in the fourth quarter. That changes the dynamics of the game. Plus, if the Niners make that late interception, that doesn't open the door for the Giants to continue that drive and hit Larry Donnell in the end zone. So, I mean, I think you could pick out points of just about every game this season and every game in Giants history where, hey, the ball's going to bounce your way sometimes, and then there's going to be other times where the ball doesn't bounce your way, especially if you go back to the Super Bowl victories in recent history.
And, you know, when you say bounce your way, you imply that there's fortune involved. And yes, there is luck involved in a lot of these plays, but some plays are just guys catching the ball. The 49er play where it was, I believe, he was trying to throw the seam route to Miles White, and this 49er player jumped in front of him right in the hands and he dropped it. And Landon Collins is a similar thing. You're in an opportunity to make a play.
Gotta make it.
Go out and make the play. That's what helps you win football games. Another thing from this game, just look at the giveaways and the takeaways, and it reflects in the numbers this season. If you take a look at the NFC East, Lance, the Giants are sitting pretty in first place right now in 3-2. They have 8 takeaways and 3 giveaways. They are plus 5. The Redskins at 2-3 have 6 takeaways and 9 giveaways. They're minus 3. The Philadelphia Eagles are plus 3, 13 takeaways. They have a problem turning the ball over themselves with 10.
Yeah.
And then the Cowboys are worst of the group. They only have 3 takeaways this year, and they have 8 giveaways at minus 5. So you look at how those plus-minus numbers have gone this year, and it shows you why the Giants are in first place right now. They're doing a great job of protecting the football. And a lot of times getting takeaways to me can be luck because you almost have to rely on the other team to make some sort of mistake in order for your player to make a play. You know, you can make a great interception, but the quarterback still has to throw the ball in a position where you can make that interception. But protecting the football is a different story. That you can control. That's making good decisions. That's protecting the football. That's keeping two hands on the ball. And I think the Giants have done a really good job of protecting the football this year because one more turnover either way in the Bills game, in the 49er game, and even the Bills game for that matter. I mean, you'd rather go back to the Redskin game. You never know how either one of those games could turn if you have an interception or fumble in your own territory. It turns into a defensive touchdown. Those things can really swing games left to right.
Well, especially since if you look at both of those games, the Bills and the Redskins, you know, there was still a big disparity, John, in terms of the opponent's production versus the Giants' production.
Yeah.
I'm talking about points. I mean, the fourth quarter differential is still widespread between what the Giants are doing and their opponents are doing. And you brought up the turnovers. The Giants only have 3 turnovers, and I agree. They're doing a great job protecting the football. The running backs have no fumbles. I think that's a key thing that jumps off the page. But
and neither do the receivers or tight ends, by the way.
Correct,
no
yes.
skill position player has a fumble on
it's
this
just
team.
Eli Manning.
Yep.
He's the only one that has coughed up the football. But what's also interesting is Manning's responsible for 3 turnovers, right, John? All 3 turnovers have come in the red zone.
In,
that's what's so bizarre about
that. In the opponent's red zone.
The opponent's red zone. Yeah, I mean, when the Giants are knocking on the door.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as if they're given gifts when they're down all the way deep in their own territory. It's a matter of, hey, you're at the brink of punching it in, and they cough up the football.
And by the way, do you want to know why the Giants, while their yardage in terms of yards given up per game is near the bottom of the league, but their points allowed per game is near the middle of the league? It's because of that. Why did the Giants' defense give up so many points last year? The offense was giving the other team the ball in Giants' territory.
Short field.
Short field, inside the 30, even inside the 20, inside the 10. And the defense was getting put in this huge hole, having to stop other teams being on that side of the field. That Giants' defense, I'd have to, in fact, you know what? Today, or maybe during the show, I'll try to do this. I need to look up how many times an opposing offense has started their drive on the Giants' side of the field. I'm not even looking for inside the 30 or 20. Just on the Giants' side of the 50-yard line, how many times has an opponent started their drive on that side of the field?
I want to say once. And the one that jumps out to me, and I don't even know if it was perhaps real deep in their own territory, but remember the bad punt by Brad Wing in the Buffalo game. I can't remember if the Bills started, because that led to that field goal. That was the only thing the Bills did in the first half.
Was there a punt return maybe that got brought back past the Giants 50 or close to it?
Only thing is the Redskins game they had a special teams touchdown. Other than that,
I'm going to send the
quick email of anything
and see if I can.
No, it is a good question, but I think whatever those numbers show, John, I don't think they're going to be detrimental.
Oh no, it's going to be very positive.
Yeah, and I think it's also a reflection of how far along the Giants special teams groups have come in terms of what Brad Wing has brought to the table, and then on top of that, Dwayne Harris's returns and the coverage teams overall. So I mean, that's a big reason why the points versus the yardage are on opposite ends of the spectrum. I mean, think about it. If you look at what the Niners did in this last game on Sunday, San Francisco's two fourth-quarter touchdowns were 11 plays, 80 yards, 8 plays, 80 yards. I mean, they were forcing the opponent to have to go down the entire length of the field, whereas at times last season, as you noted, John, as a result of some of these costly turnovers, you're giving positive field position to the opposition, and they only have to put together perhaps a 50 or a 60-yard drive. So that's why the yardage is up there this season compared to last year, but the points are down as opposed to what you saw last year. Now, will that trend continue? I mean, that remains to be seen. I think as they get healthier on defense, you assume that this group is going to tighten up some of these big yardage plays that they have surrendered.
All right, and now here are the two things that I think are red flags from the game on Sunday, even though the Giants came out with a win. And I think one specifically could be – well, two specific. Both of them can be issues against the Eagles, but one more so than the other. The first one, and I think this is a pattern we've seen a little bit over the course of this year, the Giants' defense in the second half of these games seems to wear down a little bit, whether it's – the fact that they play with so much raw effort that they run out of gas a little bit in the second half. They rotate so many guys, so I'm not really sure that's it. Or are other offenses seeing what the Giants do? They make their halftime adjustments, and then they take advantage. I honestly don't know which one it is, or maybe it's just coincidence. But the Giants' defense, fourth quarter worse than the third quarter now, has had some issues getting off the field in the second half of some of these games.
Yeah, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, similar to what we were talking about in terms of the drives for the opposition, but I would assume, John, time of possession's got to be lopsided.
Yeah.
For opponents in the fourth quarter versus what they do in the first three quarters. I mean, point differential alone indicates that there's obviously a big difference in terms of the opposition having the ball a lot in the fourth quarter compared to the first three quarters. Now, part of it, I think, is what you alluded to, halftime adjustments. You have to take that into consideration. Listen, everybody gets paid to play football at a high level. These coaches are very talented. They pick up on schemes and trends. I think part of it is also perhaps, you know, when you go up against quarterbacks that are mobile and running backs that are physical, it does take its toll. And I think the other thing to take into consideration here, John, you know, they are coming off a game where they were down three linebackers and they were down Robert Ayers. So you didn't have nearly as much depth in this last game as you had in previous games. So that doesn't mean that you discredit what has taken place in terms of the trends, but I think we need to see what does this defense do when all the personnel is back on the field.
And I think some of those losses, especially a linebacker and throwing George Selvey to a defensive end, affected the run defense, because in the first half you saw some penetration. Carlos Hyde had probably 3 or 4 or 5 runs for losses. The Giants had a bunch of tackles for loss in that first half. But then in the second half, Hyde started going a little bit here. And I can bring up the first half and second half differential with his numbers. I got it right here. Overall, Carlos Hyde was 21 for 93. Well, in the first half, he was just 8 for 12. That means in the second half, he ran the ball 13 times for 81 yards. So he had a very, very much easier time running the ball in half number two against the Giants. Now, issue number two, and it's not reflected in the sack numbers, and that's why when Lance and I, you know, talk about pass protection, we often say the sack numbers can be tricky, and they'll often, you know, tell you things that aren't true. If you didn't watch this game and you look at the Giants stats, you say, oh, Eli Manning didn't get sacked. The Giants offensive line did a fantastic job. But according to the official stats, he got hit 7 times. And those official numbers usually downplay the number of times a quarterback is actually hit. So he was probably hitting the double digits. And we saw some guys, once again, I think getting around the tackles outside and harassing Eli Manning, trying to strip the ball away from him a couple times and knocking him to the ground an awful lot after he released the ball.
Well, specifically Aaron Lynch, John, you said that they documented 7 quarterback hits. Lynch is down for 5 of them, so he was extremely active, and he's one of their outside linebackers, and you know he's one of the guys that had to step up with Ahmad Brooks not in the lineup, unfortunately, because of the death of his sister. So you know we knew the Niners have personnel that to get to the quarterback, and we knew that this physical defense was certainly going to test the Giants' offensive line. But you know even with the quarterback hits up there, John, and I agree with you, you know, you have to put some stock and substance into that. The fact that he did throw the ball 54 times not one sack, you still need to give the offensive line a tip of the cap as a result of that, regardless of the number of quarterback hits.
Absolutely. Considering the number of opportunities
that's a
the
lot
Niners
of times.
Had to rush the quarterback, those numbers not as high as they could have been. But at the same time, you don't want to see number 10 on his back as much as he was in that game on Sunday. 201-939-4513. We got a packed set of lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Don't forget, folks, that BBKL is brought to you by DraftKings, Daily Fantasy Sports Destination, a DraftKings you can play as often as you want with no long-term commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to play for free today. Abdul in Minnesota will lead us off today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Abdul, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, guys. It's still morning here, so don't rush my day. So I called last week and I said, everyone pump the brakes. The 49ers aren't as bad as we think they are because they always play us tough. Like, throw the records out because they always give us a headache. And what happened? We almost lost the game. This week, the same thing. The Eagles are a better than we think 2-3 team. I think they're starting to get their offense together. And, you know, these games just make me nervous. Eagles, Niners, Cowboy games. We never know what's going to happen.
Abdul, once again, it's not just Eagles, Niners, Cowboys. It's any game. In the NFL, weird things happen. Dude, how about last night? The Chargers had no business losing that game to the Pittsburgh Steelers with Michael Vick at quarterback. But you know what? They screwed up enough, and they figured out a way to do it.
Exactly. Which leads us to you just talking about how the Giants – second half, we're kind of a different team, and we have a history of letting teams hang around, and you know, then either our defense gets tired or whatever. I think the problem is our defense started off undermanned all year and under talented, and we've been putting together great efforts. And eventually, when you're under talented and undermanned, you know, you run out. And I think that's the problem with our defense, and we need to score a ton of points to make sure that we're not, you know, only up by 3 in the last few minutes, or only up by 7. You know, we need to be up 10 to 14 points at the end of these games to win. And I think that's going to be a year-long theme for us, you know, because we don't have a pass rush, and we just aren't that talented on that side of the ball. That's what it is. You know, we're not bad. We're not terrible. We're just not, you know, a team that will just stop you. We can't shut you down, and that's the theme of it. You know, so our offense is going to have to keep us 14 to 10 points ahead at the end of games to make sure that we win. And I just think that's what it's going to be for the rest of the year. That being said, this week, you know, being undermanned, under-talented, if our injuries do not clear up, you know, offense and defense, if we don't have Beckham or Andrew Randall, it's going to be a tough game.
You know? It is.
I understand that, you know, next man up and all that kind of stuff, but it's going to be tough, you know, with Jeremy Davis and the White.
Miles White.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll play as hard as he can, but the drop-off is going to be just huge. So, that's another, you know, our Wednesday, Thursday practices. Thank God we have one extra day. It's a Monday night game, so hopefully that we'll be able to, you know, to heal some, you know, these soft, you know, these calf injuries that are showing up left and right, and, you know, hamstrings. You know, hopefully that will, you know, be good.
Now, Abdul, real quick, just be careful now. And look, I'm not underplaying how important this Eagles game is. It's a division game. It's ultra important. But the last thing you want to do is have these guys rush back, and then they not only have to leave the Eagles game in the second quarter because they re-injure something, then they can't play versus Dallas.
No.
Because honestly, rush
anyone back or take any
exactly
chance.
Right.
If they're hurt, they're hurt, and we'll live another day to play. So I'm just saying, if they're not there, they're not there. Yep. I'm not saying to rush them back at all.
Absolutely.
That's a pound foolish, penny wise, something like that, whatever it's called. So watching last night's game, as you said, it just proves that anything can happen, you know, at any moment. Okay, did you guys think that Larry Donnell was catching a winning touchdown on Sunday night. He was the last person I thought would be winning the game for us. And look what happens, you know? After all these drops and flips he's been doing all year, he's suddenly become, you know, this great tight end. And everyone's giving him praise where, you know, 2 weeks ago he could have been benched or cut. So,
well, Abdul, that's another example of how the narrative in the NFL changes week to week, what you just said. I mean, 1 week you're killing a guy, the next week you're patting him on the back and you're crowning him. I mean, that's exactly
quarter,
what happens.
You know what I mean?
But, I mean, that's just the nature of the league.
One last thing, and I'll let you guys go. On Sunday, the Giants looked more like the old 49er team than the 49ers did. Like, both the running backs reminded me of who's that guy who used to run with his knees way up by his chest?
Roger Craig?
Roger Craig. The Giants did these little dunk off these running backs who are making it reminds me of the 80s Montana Cowboys. Sorry, Cowboys, Niners. They just completely remind me of that. I was like, it kind of shocked me how much their offense has changed from what I'm used to seeing the Giants play.
Well, I didn't mean to cut you off, Abdul. I was going to say, with some of the injuries to the wide receivers, that's why it's so important for the running backs to stay involved in the passing game, because that could help offset some of these injuries, especially
totally.
If your running backs could take on about 9 to 10 receptions a game. You're not necessarily going to get 100 receiving yards out of them, but at least you stay in manageable third downs. I mean, that could be a huge difference maker.
We are definitely using the short passing game as for our lack of running game, which is fine with me. I don't care. You know, we can run for 6 yards or pass for 6 yards as long as we move those chains. So I'm glad that, you know, that McAdoo and Eli are, you know, looking out of the box and using all our weapons to create some kind of offense, because sometimes, you know, offensive coordinators get fall in love with their own theme or own plan, and they don't, you know, they don't go to plan B. And I think we're going to plan B, C, D, which is great. And I think that's the only way for us to go, you know, just use all our offensive weapons to – because I think our offense is what's going to carry us. I said the defense, you know, it is what it is. You know, whether they try hard, you know, but Beeson can't stay on the field. You know, he has the will, but his body's just not – is not there anymore. You know, he gets hurt no matter what. It seems like, you know, he's just you know, bit by that bug. And, you know, besides our cornerbacks, you know – And we're just not that talented of a group. And so hopefully Ayers gets back, Kennard gets back, and we have a little more people out there. But
thank you, Abdul.
Yeah, take care, guys.
All right, take it easy, man. Appreciate it. By the way, I got the number back from my guy. The Giants have only allowed 2 drives to begin on their side of the 50 this year. That is tied for second fewest in the league. 4 other teams have 2, Panthers, Bengals, Broncos, Patriots. And by the way, what do all those teams have in common?
Well, they got winning records.
They have way winning records.
Yes.
Way winning records. And then actually, the Steelers have only allowed 1 drive to start on their side of the 50. So that's the other team. Just to give you some differences, just to give you a contrast from other teams, the Falcons are 3 also, just 3, which is good for them. Let's give you some examples of teams that aren't so good. The Cardinals, 5. Packers, 5. And I think 2 or 3 of those Packer ones came this week on those Aaron Rodgers turnovers. 3 at home, which, by the way, was quite the shock for Packer fans.
Very rare for him.
The Jets have given up 6 on that side of the field. Seahawks, 6. Philly, 7. Dallas, 8. Washington, 8. So that's basically 6 more possessions for the other teams in the NFC East with the opposing team starting on their side of the 50, and it just really gives you that much of an advantage.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting, though, because some of the teams you mentioned that were near the bottom also have winning records, but it's because they make up for it with, obviously, good defenses. For example, the Jets or the Cardinals, I mean, they have game-changing defenses. So even if they give the opponent some gifts, they're able to come through with the stops. I mean, really, it's a give-and-take type of relationship with a lot of these statistical trends in the NFL. I mean, sometimes you're going to see winning teams at the bottom of the rankings, and then you're going to see some bad teams at the top of the rankings. It's hard to make sense of this, but I think the defense is the biggest difference maker with some of those teams at the bottom being able to make some defensive stops. I'm trying to just think of the 2 drives that the Giants have allowed the opposition to start in their own territory. I believe one of them was that bad Brad Wing punt. And I'm just trying to think of what the other drive was. Hopefully maybe we'll find that out throughout the course of the show, or at least moving forward on a future show. But those numbers are great. I mean, to only allow two possessions to start in your own territory just goes to show you the strides that the special teams unit has made overall. And it takes pressure off the defense. I mean, why put your defense in a position, John, where they have to have their back against the wall, and all of a sudden you're asking them to hold the opposition from going maybe, let's say, 30 or 40 yards. So that certainly has been a big difference maker throughout the course of this season in terms of the Giants' numbers.
201-939-4513. Let's get back to the phones. Derek is down in Atlanta. I haven't talked to Derek in a while. What's going on, bud? How are you?
Oh, that was kind of fast, but thanks. How's it going, Lance?
I'm doing well, Derek. Spoke to you yesterday. Okay. How's everything?
Yeah, I know. But I was going to say, you know, that pass across the middle by Rivers last night going to Keenan Allen that got battered down.
Okay.
Do you remember that? Did you see that play? It cost me half a point. That would have been a full point. Cost me DraftKings championship.
Oh,
but,
boy. Wow, that's a heartbreaker.
That's a rough one, Derek.
Yeah, that is a tough one. Yeah.
And I was going to say, some of these, you know, I'm more concerned about the defense and the offense a lot because, you know, we got a good quarterback. So look at Green Bay. Look at Philly. Look at last night, San Diego. Even Chicago won a couple of games. These teams have terrible lines. We don't have that terrible line, but if you got a good quarterback, you know, that can cover up a lot of ills on the offensive line. So, you know, I think that as long as we get a relatively healthy defense, we're going to look pretty good the rest of the season. I wanted to say it shakes under or over on Beeson playing 12 games right now.
You know what? I think Shakes might win that bet on the under. I think it's going to be close, but I think right now, he played. That's the thing. He left in the first quarter, but it still counts as a game.
Did we call that was the first play of the game? Are we going to give him that one?
Oh, no. He played
it
the game.
It goes down.
He
Listen,
played in the game.
Derek,
rules are rules,
yeah,
Derek.
In terms of stats, he gets a game log for that. Whether he plays one snap, two snaps, or three snaps.
It counts.
It counts, Derek.
Rules are rules.
Yep, we're not making exceptions for Shakes here. No way.
Now, I noticed that we also, I just wanted to say, I noticed that when we played defenses with that wide nine or in the pass rushing, that's when Newhouse and Flowers are starting to get a little bit of trouble. But, and I think if I'm right, Philly plays that same wide nine, or they used to play it.
They used to. I'm not sure if they still do or not.
Yeah, that was with Jim Johnson, their former defensive coordinator.
But I think if I'm looking at tape, I think I'll go back to the wide nine in this game after seeing how many, you know, the kind of pressure. Fortunately, Eli's getting the ball out of his hand, you know, within, you know, 2.5 seconds, so that's helping. But pulling Pugh on a run game seems to be working, and I'm hoping they keep doing that more. And if they go to that wide nine and you pull Pugh, that should open up more of a gap. So in that little space there.
Well, the offensive line has done well in terms of the battle in the trenches. I mean, the numbers on the ground don't necessarily show that, Derek, but there have been times where, you know, short screen passes have worked effectively. You know, Jennings was fighting through a lot of tackles in the last game to pick up some yardage. So, you know, a lot of that is at least the offensive lineman continuing to fight, continuing to battle, you know, and not give up on plays. I mean, it's a physical group that has been showcased over the first five games, regardless of what the numbers showcase.
Yeah. Okay. The last thing I had to say is that we all know that there's been situational play calling issues in this game. I think that Tom Coughlin is probably one of the top coaches during the week to call a game plan. I mean, when they're sitting in his office with his resident coach and it's around a table, there ain't too many other coaches that can put a game plan together. I do have issues that it seems like we're so flat coming out of halftime where it's that game, that third quarter, it almost seems almost to me like a waste. And then we kind of try to kick it back in once the team starts to catch up in the fourth quarter. Situation of play calling, in-game adjustments after halftime, we need to work on that. And our guys All right, Derek. You guys later.
Yeah.
No, look, Derek, I agree. I'm not sure if it's necessarily the game playing at halftime, but you need to have a little bit better play in the second half, and I think that's very important. I got stats for you, by the way, here. Do you want
okay,
right
I just wanted to throw out one other stat about what Derek was talking about. I mean, first possession of the second half this season, of their five possessions, they've scored a touchdown and two field goals out of the five. So, you know, they've only punted twice.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's not bad compared to what they've done in previous seasons.
All right, here we go. So this year I mentioned the Giants have only allowed the opponents to start two drives on their side of the 50. They allowed one touchdown, by the way. That is second fewest in the NFL. In 2014, opposing teams started 23 drives on the Giants' side of the 50. That's seventh most in the NFL. So that's a lot there. Now, the Giants' defense did a great job. They only allowed five touchdowns in those 23 drives, which is phenomenal, but, but there's a lot of field goals in there too, which hurts you. You go back to 2013, the Giants allowed 30 drives to start on their own side of the 50, third most in the NFL for 11 touchdowns. So the last 2 years, that's really hurt this team, giving other teams the ball in great field position. That has not been the case this year, and that's really helped the defense.
Well, and then just think about this. 2014, John, 28 giveaways by the Giants. 2013, 44 giveaways. So it's no surprise that there were a number of drives that started in Giants territory because what we were talking about earlier, John, it goes hand-in-hand with giveaways. This season, three giveaways in five games. Only two opponents' drives have started on the Giants' side of the field. So, I mean, if that continues, they protect the football, those numbers should stay relatively low.
Boy, you have those giveaway numbers memorized. Well, that's pretty good.
I've thrown them out so many times over the last few weeks.
It's pretty good.
They tend to stick with you.
Steve in Georgia. Steve, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, Steve. How are you?
What do you got, Steve?
I'm good. But I can't talk as fast as you guys, so just bear with me.
Ah, go ahead, Steve. Take your time, brother.
All right. So, you know, I'm happy with the way, you know, the Giants, they've won their last three games, but still, you know, in the fourth quarter, they just have trouble putting these games away. They always got to make it more difficult. And, you know, you could look at something like that. You could look at, you know, maybe penalties they committed. You could look at bad clock management at times, like that game against the Redskins, for example. You know, that interception against the 49ers, you know, in the last seconds of the first half, that could have been real huge had the Giants not won that game. You know, Eli has hardly thrown any interceptions this year, but those ones that he has thrown have come at really bad times. And just, you know, the Giants have made it a lot harder than it needed to be to win those three games. So, you know, defense, you know, has had some trouble stopping them on third down, forcing punts, allowing them to get down the field. We've had trouble in the red zone scoring touchdowns and just having to settle for field goals. You know, you get what I'm saying?
Well, red zone has been a troubling statistic. I would wholeheartedly agree with you, Steve. In terms of Eli Manning's interceptions, I don't know so much if there's only been two interceptions, Steve, if they've come at a bad time. To me, they've come in a bad area. I think that's a better way to describe them because both of them were in the red zone. The one against Buffalo, red zone opportunity, have an opportunity to at least score a field goal at worst, and then right before the half of the Niners game, at worst, you have an opportunity to put 3 points on the board. So it's more of where they're coming on the field that are perhaps coming back to haunt the Giants, not necessarily the time of the game because even in the Buffalo game, you're still up by two scores at that point, and the Niners game, you go into the locker room still up by a touchdown. So I don't know if it really killed them at that point, but you're right. They've got to improve in terms of their red zone efficiency.
And
no doubt about that.
And, Steve, the Giants right now do have the worst offensive red zone percentage in the National Football League. They're scoring only at a, let's see if I have the number right here, a 36% clip, and that is 30th. In the national, that's not last. It's third to last at 30th in the National Football League.
They're 7 of 19, 7 touchdowns in 19 trips.
Yeah, definitely gotta improve on that. You know, because that's been a problem. You know, not just this year. We've been seeing that for a while now, and.
Well,
you know,
you can't give away points, Steve. And listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. You get into the red zone 19 times. I mean, those are opportunities. I don't know if you have the numbers up in front of you, John. Do you have everybody's total red zone trips on that chart, or that wasn't anything that you had when you looked at the red zone?
I don't have trips.
No, I'm curious, compared to 19, where do the Giants rank? Because 19 seems like a lot of trips through five games. if you do the math. I don't know off the top of my head. I haven't looked at those numbers carefully.
I don't know where to even find red zone trips.
Like I said, I'm just throwing it out there off the top of my head. I'd be curious who has the most red zone trips, because when I see 19, I say, all right, they're getting in the red zone more often than not. Mm-hmm. It's just the percentage of punching it in is quite low, and that's why, you know, Josh Brown has gone out there for multiple field goals. He's been perfect on the season, so he's taken full advantage of his opportunities. But, you know, a lot of close games. You go back to the Dallas game, the Atlanta game, even this Niners game. You know, how many games have been decided by, you know, 6 points or less here or there? You walk away with an extra touchdown or not, there's some additional comfort in how these games play out. So that's why you want to see the efficiency go up, and you want to take the pressure off of your defense so you don't have to be put in a position where, hey, we need to constantly make fourth quarter stops. I think that will certainly loosen up the play and the flow of the game moving forward. So that'll be key to watch.
Absolutely. Maurice is in New Jersey. He's up next. Mo, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you, Mo?
How we doing, Mo?
I'm doing good. Look, got a quick question for you. I haven't studied the Eagles. Whenever other NFC East teams are on, if I'm kind of outside, I don't rush in the house to watch them. They're not the Giants. So give me the Philadelphia Eagles' strengths and weaknesses on both sides of the ball, like just their strengths and weaknesses.
Well, to me, the big problem, Maurice, right now with Philadelphia, I know people point to their defense, but I think their defensive problems are still rooted in their offense's lack of production. I mean, I think the one number on offense that really hurts Philadelphia is that right now they are converting just 28% of their third downs, and that puts them, I believe, tied for 30th in the league.
Correct.
So that third down percentage is taking their offense off the field a lot, which puts their defense on the field. You combine that with the pace that the Eagles' offense plays with, their defense is on the field way too much. Right now, Philadelphia overall is the 23rd-ranked defense, all right? That's in terms of yards per game. But if you break it down a little bit deeper, their yards per play is actually in the top 10 in the league. Even their passing defense, which is 26th in overall yards, they're 9th in the NFL in yards per pass play allowed, which is actually really good. So it's just the volume of plays their defense is on the field is what's really hurting them. Per play, per possession, their defense is actually playing pretty well. They've just been exposed so much because, quite frankly, Sam Bradford's been inconsistent. He hasn't been that accurate. They can't run the football on first and second down until this last week versus the Saints, which puts them into third and long, which doesn't allow them to convert third downs. Throw on top of that the fact that none of their wide receivers have really stepped up in the absence of Jeremy Maclin, and they haven't been consistent enough offensively, and that's exposed their defense a little bit.
And, Mo, what I'll add to what John just said, you know, two other numbers that show me that defense is not as bad as people make it out to be. They're 8th in red zone defense, John. So they've been able to make some key stops when the opponents get down inside the 20. And on top of that, you know, you mentioned the yardage is up there, but they're 11th in points per game allowed. You know, they're only giving up 21 points per game, and two of their three losses, Mo, have come by a total of 5 points. So they've been competitive. They've been in games. I mean, this defense has been quite impressive. Plus, you know, they're getting great production out of their third-round pick this year, Jordan Hicks, who's replaced Michael Kendricks and also has filled in for Kiko Alonso at the inside linebacker spot. So, you know, don't overlook this defense. Plus, they're up there in sacks. In terms of offense, you know, John just alluded to that, Mo. They have struggled to rush the football, and that obviously forces Sam Bradford to make a lot more throws than he anticipates. And, you know, Bradford's got 6 interceptions. Half of them have come in the red zone. So the Eagles, they're moving the football, but they're then shooting themselves in the foot because they're not protecting the football when they're about to knock on the door of the end zone.
And Bradford's been somebody in the past, Mo, that has been considered an accurate passer. I've probably watched 3 out of the 5 Eagle games this year. I've seen a lot of them, and I'll try to watch the game against the Saints on Wednesday. I don't believe he's been that accurate this year. He's made some bad throws, and Lance mentioned those picks in the red zone. He's made some bad throws. And, you know, the guys are open.
Yeah.
He's just missing them, and teams are taking advantage.
I think why he's throwing it so bad is because I looked at an Eagles game, and his jersey just looked like it's too big. I'm just being honest. I don't know if that's why, but I don't know. But okay, I hear what you guys are saying, and you know this Eagle team, you know they always gave the Giants, you know, headaches. But I really think, you know, with the injuries that we have, you know, I'm really sitting here like, you know, how do we do this? And you guys just touched on red zone efficiency. Whenever we get down there, we have to score because, you know, teams tend to show up, You know, like the 49ers, everybody was like, you know, certain fans were like, oh, we're going to smash them. I'm like, listen, don't get too excited. Like, teams come and play the Giants and seem to just find their rhythm. And those deep crossing patterns across the middle, like, I don't know how our linebacker core is going to be on for Monday. I hope everybody can get healthy. But it's a lot to defend. You know, people can say what they want about Philly. One of my best friends is a Philadelphia fan. But, you know, Sproles and those guys, and I had Sproles on fantasy, and, you know, I don't really have no other running back that's pretty good. So, you know, I'll take the fantasy loss if the Giants win. But I want to leave you guys with this question. Eli Manning's been doing pretty well, and I think this game is, you know, get the call in to Eli, let him go up to that line, and let his veteran instincts kick in. Let him just get the feel of the game. Let him put us in positions to find the completions and get the most out of a play. So I want to ask you guys, because I looked at his stats, and I think he has 10 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. Last year, his stats were good. Now, fact or fiction, will Eli improve in any of those areas, whether it's touchdowns, yards, or completion percentage, or lower interception number? Will he, fact or fiction, will he improve in any of those categories? And I'll take it off the line.
Thank you for the call. That's
appreciate it. Look at this. He's playing our own games with
I like
us.
It. No, I like it. Well, this way both of us can actually
turn
answer
the
question. All right,
yeah.
Let me look at Eli Manning's numbers last year and see if I think he's going to be better in any of those categories. Let me see. All right, let me see. Career stats. Off the top of my head, I think he might have a better completion percentage. That's just off the top of my head. All right, last year, 92 quarterback rating, 4,400 yards, 63% completions, 30 touchdowns. Right now he has 10 touchdowns. That will put him on pace for about 31 or 32. He's also on pace to break his yards record, but that's going to be really, really close. He's basically on pace for 4,400 yards again, 1,400 so far this year, 4,400 last year. And he's completed 66% of his passes as opposed to 63%. I would guess if he's going to be better at one of them, I think it would be the completion percentage, and the second most likely one would probably be the touchdowns. And I do believe he'll throw for fewer than 14 picks because I don't think he's going to have that one big 5-interception game like he had last year against San Francisco.
Yeah, I was going to go with touchdowns and interceptions. I think you could pretty much flip a coin. One of those two, the touchdowns is either going to increase or the interceptions is going to be lower than 14 this season. You know, completion percentage, that tends to fluctuate. I mean, the only thing that I think bodes well for Manning this season.
And it also tends to go down to the end of the year when you get into bad weather situations.
Correct, but I think what bodes well for him is the involvement of the running backs, John, in the passing game more so than any other season that I remember.
Well, Shane Vereen, I mean, those are easy 4-yard pass for Eli Manning
so that
turn
keeps
into 17-18 yard gains, and that will certainly get the number up.
So that, I think, could, you know, help him in that category. But, you know, 63 was pretty high last season, especially for Manning's
high
numbers
of his career.
During the course of his career. So that's why I'm not necessarily sold that that's going to stay in that place. But, you know, 10 touchdowns, he had 30 last season. I don't see why he can't get in that 32 to 33 barometer this season. And when you look at his career high, Manning's career high for touchdown passes in a single season is 31.
2010.
And that came in 2010. And he had 25 interceptions that season. I don't think the ratio is going to be in that department this year, but he could get a career high in touchdown passes this season. I don't think that's going to be an issue for him.
I think it's very possible, and I would not be shocked if he threw fewer than 14 picks. And I think the completion percentage would be close, but I think he has a chance to finish above 63. We'll see. 201-939-4513. Adam's out in Ohio. Adam, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing well. I actually just got back into Columbus last night. I had the chance to come into New York and go to the game, so it was an exciting one to see.
That is a great game to see.
Yeah. Last year was Dallas game, which kind of went the other way, so it was a little redemption for me.
Oh, absolutely.
Are any of your nails still on your fingers after that game? That's my big question.
I got about a third of a pinky left. That's about it.
Okay, that's good to hear at least. Something's still there.
I think Abdul made some interesting points about the defense, but I think one thing that the common denominator weeks 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are that we seem to be breaking down in the fourth quarter. But when these teams appear to be playing from behind and they go into hurry-ups and they go into obvious passing situations, it looks to me like they have success because we have a glaring, glaring deficiency in our pass rush. I mean, Colin Kaepernick, who seems to have struggled all season long, he looked pretty good against us. Nobody can get anywhere near the opposing quarterbacks, you know, and if you blitz, you have to get there. Otherwise, it's even worse, and we don't seem to be getting there even if we blitz. You know, so it looks like, to me, it's almost ironic when these teams come from behind, they're more effective against our defense because we can't touch quarterbacks. These guys are leaving the game completely clean. I don't know, what are your thoughts? What is the solution to that? Do we hope Pierre Paul makes his way back eventually and is the same player? Do you hope Robert Ayers and Selvey both come back and can manufacture some pressure? That seems to be the biggest gaping hole, in my opinion, on an otherwise decent defense.
Well, I think out of Ayers, Selvey, and Wynn, having them on the field at least at the same time or in the same rotation, which has been very rare this season, unfortunately due to injuries, you know, it doesn't mean it's going to put the numbers through the stratosphere, but I think that should certainly improve the success of the pass rush. That's one area. And the other thing to notice with the Niners game compared to the other games you were talking about, now, granted, the lack of the pass rush is still even across the board with all these games, but remember, San Francisco had good success on the ground in this past game, whereas in the other games, you know, the Giants were stopping the run and they could get at least a little bit more creative and flexible. This last game, they couldn't get as creative and flexible because Carlos Hyde was having a field day on the ground, specifically in the second half. So when you are going up against an opponent, Adam, that's having success on the ground, manageable third downs, you're now limited in terms of your ability to blitz and get to the quarterback. So I think that also impacted the flow of this last game.
Yeah, but Adam, you're right. Overall, if this team wants to take that next step as a defense, the next step's becoming a better pass rushing team, whether it's getting home with the blitz or somebody on that defensive line becoming a more consistent pressure player. Maybe it's DeMonte Moore, who had 2 sacks last week. Now, they're not your traditional sacks. He kind of got them on scrambles and stuff like that. But I think that's the next step. Let's see if somebody can step up and prove their play and do it.
Well, I mean, it's tougher to defend against the run, in fairness, without John Beeson and Devon Kennard on the field as well.
That's true. And also, don't forget George Selvey. He's excellent against the run at defensive end.
True. I got one more quick question for you, and I know you guys are busy, so I'll let you go. The route to Odell Beckham in the red zone that got picked off looked like the same route we threw right at Odell after the fight last week in the Buffalo game. Why are they throwing jump ball? I mean, we all agree Odell Beckham's phenomenal and he can do it all, but it looks to me like in space, I want him changing direction and sitting in a zone or sitting in a gap. I don't know that jump balls are the way to go unless it's Dallas on Sunday night and he can only use one hand. you know, that route to me seems to be bizarre for Odell Beckham because he's not a big receiver.
Yeah, he's not big though, Adam, but he has really good ball skills. You will not find a guy in the league that has much better vertical leaping ability and is just so good at, you know, using his hands and body to get to, and athleticism for that matter, to get to the football. His ball skills are just so impressive. I think the Giants trust him that if a better throw is made on that particular play, that he's good enough to beat the defensive back to the ball. Thanks for the call, Adam. We appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, man. And look, I know he's not your traditional jump ball guy. He's a fast speed quickness guy, but Lance, he's so good and has such strong hands. I think they trust him in those spots.
Well, I would. If I'm Eli Manning, I would say, hey, I'm going to throw the ball up there, and I know my wide receiver is going to come through. He's going to make a play. I mean, look at what he does for balls that are not even in play anymore. He still goes and attacks them. I mean, I agree with Adam. I think Odell Beckham is extremely effective if you get him out in open space on a short pass and you let him work his magic after the catch.
But where is there less space? In the red zone.
Yeah.
There's just
so
not
you
enough
don't
space.
Have as much
guys
to work
are
with.
Compressed into a smaller area.
That's a great point.
And that's one of the reasons why I think the Giants have had issues in the red zone, because there's not enough space to spread the field and do some of the stuff the Giants do in their passing game.
And that's why it's important for Danelle and Ty and all these other guys to make plays,
Vereen.
Because then the spacing improves and then Beckham will have a little bit more room to operate, so Manning doesn't always have to make it a jump ball situation.
Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. We got to go over Jeff Fiegel's picks. We're not real good this week, which is kind of on me. I helped him make the picks this week, so I can take the hit on this one. I was wrong on a
couple
of them.
Well, you can both take the hits then.
One I did okay, but the other two, Not so much.
Well, we got to go through them now?
Nah.
Look at this. You tease it and then you avoid it?
Yeah, I'm teasing. A tease is when you say you're going to do something and you do it later.
I know how the industry works. Thank you very much.
Apparently you don't.
No, I was just, the way it was sounding was we were going
to
bang this out. We were going to get it out of the way.
Week two is in the books and Fiegels is not walking away with the big money. Neither is Schmelk. He took some chances. Didn't work out. Sam Bradford was the quarterback. Now, that was the best of the three picks. 330 yards, a couple of touchdowns, two picks, 70% completion percentage. Solid selection. Now, I thought the Broncos would have a good game on the ground against the Oakland Raiders.
Well, they have yet to have a good game on the ground.
It did not happen this week either.
Not
only
a
11 carries for 22 yards for C.J. Anderson and two catches. That did not work out.
That left a mark.
And I tempted Fiegels to spend big money on Julio Jones. I knew he was banged up going into the week, but with that Saints second, with the Redskins secondary all banged up, both their starting corners are out, I figured big game for Julio Jones, right? Right?
Makes sense. Listen,
nope.
Can't go wrong with him.
Well, I did. Five catches, 67 yards, no touchdowns. That one didn't work either. That's what happened to the DraftKings lineup for Jeff Fiegels this week. If you want to draft your own lineup, go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. Nugs in Minnesota has been holding the longest. Nugs!
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What up, Nugs?
Doing well, Nugs. What do you got for us?
Well, I just want to defend my team a little bit. You know, if Giants fans, they're kind of skits to me. I mean, we went 2 years and got 13 wins. Never sniffed the division lead. Never sniffed a real opportunity to play ourselves into the playoffs. Now let's remember, we had some clock management issues early in the year, but we lost our first two games by what, 4 or 5 points. We're 5 points away from being 5-0.
I don't sense, okay? I don't get the sense that Giant fans are very negative right now. I honestly find them to be pretty happy with where the team is at this time.
Well, of course they're happy. Of course they're happy with the lead. I mean, with the division lead, and they're happy with being over 500 for the first time in like 4 years. Of course they're happy with that. But at the same time, I just feel like there's a lot of nitpicking going on. You know, those guys on the other teams, they're millionaires too. They're getting paid big, fat contracts to cut Ruben Randle off and intercept the ball or, you know, whatever. People want to talk about the picks, the pick that Eli just threw in the last game. You know what? I personally have no problem with Eli giving his number one guy a chance to make another play. I mean, it was more on Eli with the pass being so far inside that Beckham never really had a chance to really even make a play on the ball or break up the pass. But if Eli throws that good pass that we know he can make, but he was kind of rolling out a little bit under stress, I have no problem with us going for that juggler. Let's remember, we have gone into the red zone and kicked field goals. You know, and this is a part of the season where, you know, teams are really ramping up. And we want to feel like, you know, I feel like our team is an offensive juggernaut just waiting. It's not sleeping, but it's just like, you know, yawning and stretching right now. You know what I mean? And we want to get that feeling like when we get down on the other side of the 30, we're unstoppable. I have no problem with throwing it up to Odell, even if Eli throws another four picks this year doing the same thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, because if he doesn't throw it to Odell, then we're going to get a bunch of calls like, well, why aren't we giving Odell a chance? And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you're right about that, Nugs. No argument.
You like that aggressive mentality, Nugs, and I don't disagree with that. It's funny because I don't know. Did you watch the Steelers-Chargers game last night, Nugs?
Yes, sir.
So I'm curious your opinion of the last play. Because you like that aggressive approach. So if you're Mike Tomlin, do you take the field goal or do you go for the win even though there's only 5 seconds left and you may run out of time?
I'm gonna channel my inner Herm Edwards here. Hello, we play to win the game.
There you go.
That's why we play this game. You know, on Madden, I'm going for it. You know, the Steelers, they were in a rut. They had a couple of bad losses this year, and you need wins like that against conference opponents to kind of give you that, you know, that little bit of momentum, you know.
You know, guys, I hear you, but let me just say this. Considering what happened to the Steelers and Mike Tomlin earlier in the year, if they don't make it and time runs out, that dude is being burned in effigy.
Well, yeah. the narrative changes
today. Oh, yeah. My goodness, does the narrative change.
You got to understand, Mike Tomlin plays for a team that never fires their coach. Okay? You retire.
That can change real fast if things go poorly.
Well, he's got a Super Bowl ring, and it's like the same thing with Coughlin. If Coughlin didn't give us two rings, there's no way he could have missed the playoffs 4 or 5 years or whatever. But he's got a lot of love and a lot of sweat equity built in with previous success. He's shown us that he can take us there. So just give the man a chance. You know what I'm saying? And I personally have no problem with it. I was on the edge of my seat, and I don't like either one of those teams. But I was just like, yes, you know, somebody's got some kahunas. They're going for it. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And it ended up working out. The thing I noticed about the last game was, and I'm gonna channel my shakes here. I'm gonna eat some crow because I have been a Beeson basher, but it finally came to light to me last week because when he was in there in that first half, you see him adjusting the defensive line and getting those guys in their gaps. You know what I'm saying? To make sure, you know, it's like he had the play recognized. So he's shifting the defensive lineman, Hankins over here and Wynn over there to make sure that those gaps are covered so that their linebackers can come flow through. And as soon as he was out of the game, then that's the one thing that Unga doesn't give us. I think Unga gives us a little bit more as far as athletically because he's younger and doesn't have as many miles on the tires, but he's not giving us that yet. I don't know what we got to do to coach him up. He needs to understand what's going on in front of him just as much as what's going on his level. It looks like he's just so concerned about what his job is that he can't, you know, help other guys line up to make the defense
better.
Well,
Nugs, that comes with experience. I mean, and that's what you're really pointing to.
And thanks for the call, Nugs. We got to run.
And thanks so much for weighing in. That's an experience thing, John. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the difference between Beeson being out there for 10 times as many games, seeing movement on offense, and knowing where to place people. That doesn't mean Unga can't get there, but, I mean, we're talking about sample sizes that are completely different. So, I mean, I think you have to put the expectations in check as a result of the differential in how many regular season games both of those guys have played.
I have some Twitter questions I want to get to, but I got 5 minutes and 2 calls. And what was that horror movie where if you mention the name 3 times into the mirror, he shows up? Do you remember the name of that horror movie? I forget what it is.
I forget which that is. I'm not a big horror
Beetlejuice,
guy.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, Beetlejuice, I think there was another movie where he did it too. But Beetlejuice is when you go, Beetlejuice, he shows up.
Yes.
Kind of like that with Shakes. Someone mentioned Shakes, he shows up. What's going on, pal? How are you?
great analogy, man.
How are you, man?
His ears are always burning.
I'm all right. I'm good, man. I got a lot to go on, so brace with me. First off, Beeson, I think y'all got a little confused because I was actually saying if Beeson plays 12 games, then we should be fine.
Right.
And I think we'll be a playoff team because y'all all know that I'm pro Beeson. Now, with that being said, let me just throw that nugget out. We 3-0 with him in the lineup. I'm just saying. Now, he ain't played last game. You know, he played and got bowled over by Hyde. But we still won, 3-0 with him in the lineup. So, look, we need him. The leadership, just like our man Nugs said, and shout-out to Nugs because he brought up a lot of points that we bring up on the Shakedown, so obviously he listens to the Shakedown. Shout-out to my man Nugs.
You on the run from the cops there, Shakes? What's going on?
A lot of activity in the background there, Shakes. You all right?
Yeah. I'm outside because I don't really have signal. My phone had dropped on y'all, and I don't want to take no chances
right now.
That's
all good,
so,
man.
Yeah,
just hand the ball.
It's a good signal right now.
No, we appreciate that.
But Beeson playing with the leadership and lining and players up, it's huge for us, and we need that. So 12 games, we should be fine.
Okay.
Now, the point I wanted to make up is Nick. I want to bring back Nick, man. I really do. Now, I know he don't know the system of McAdoo, but he has a rapport with Eli Manning, and I believe that he can help right now.
Shakes.
And for 900K, I think he can help, man.
How many teams have had Akeem Nicks in and decided that he wasn't good enough to play?
He had a tour.
He's backing you up there, at least. Yeah.
He's seen everybody. Can I play for you? But look.
admits it.
Well, it's like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, exactly.
That's basically what it reminds me of.
No doubt, man. But I think he can help us, man. I really do. I don't like Wes Welker. And only the reason why I don't like Wes Welker is because he's short. And the injuries is the concussions. And with him being short and going across the middle, it's a lot of head shots that he's susceptible to. So I don't like bringing in Wes Welker.
You know,
I don't trust it.
Shakes,
one bad hit, and then we back to square one.
Shakes, I totally hear what you're saying, and I kind of made a funny gesture when you brought up Knicks on the air for the people watching our video. But you know what? Here's the bottom line. If the Giants get to the end of the week or even middle of the week and they say, you know what? Oh, boy, Randall and Beckham, they can't go. I think you do have to bring in guys with experience that can at least absorb some amount of the system in a short amount of time to play. And honestly, all jokes aside, I think Knicks would fall into that category because you can't bring in young guys who, you know, really can't absorb an offense quickly. You need guys that have been there and done that. And I think the two guys you mentioned both fall into that category if you see that Beckham and Randall really might not play with those hamstring injuries.
Well, and Shakes, the other thing I'll add, and I agree, I think veterans are in a better position to digest this system, John, but they also have two guys on the practice squad, and they may not be household names like Kakeem Nix and Wes Welker, but if on a short week or a quick turnaround you need somebody just for pure bodies and guys that know the system, I think they go practice squad before perhaps they bring in somebody from the outside. That's just my opinion. Doesn't mean I'm right, but I think based on the trend and the track record we've seen thus far this season, practice squad guys know the system, and they're the quickest ones who can adapt.
All right, Shakes, finish up, man. We got to run.
Yeah, yeah. I want to finish up, and I want to ask y'all a question, and I'll take the question off the air. But the one thing is, dude calling me out last week, I heard he called me out twice or whatever, and it's all about the negativity with me and everything. Listen, it's not about that, man, because if y'all remember last year, I was calling for Super Bowl, you know? So I'm not a negative person. And, I mean, I back up Charlie a lot, but I'm not on that notion, you know? If I go on what you show me. And for the last few years, 5 out of the last 6, we haven't made the playoffs. So you can't blame me for being a little pessimistic.
Well, Shakes, I don't blame you. The only thing I blame you for is backing up Charlie once in a while and the fact that you at least admit that publicly. That's the only thing I blame you for, Shakes.
And my last question, what I'm going to take off the air is Sue Parris, me and him is Facebook friends. Don't ask. But
I'm not.
On his Facebook, he's posting up a jersey, a Giant jersey, 88, and he's talking about he's healthy and guess who's come, you know, ready to come back and all that. My question is it possible for us to bring back Sue Parris? And thanks for taking my call, y'all.
I'll have to look at the nature of the transaction with Marcus Harris. I thought he was
on IR.
IR,
yeah,
right?
He is on IR. I'm looking at the roster right now.
There you go. He is on IR.
You can't bring him back this season.
But he is still technically a member of the team. So
correct.
There you go. All right. Drew in Virginia has been holding. Drew, I know you don't have much time here, Drew. We're already past 1 o'clock. You got to be really fast. 30 seconds. What do you got? Go.
Well, first and foremost, man, Mike Tomlin had to make that call because he had credibility with Pittsburgh. So, but at any rate, man, I just want to say this, man. Our defense, our secondary is only as good as our pass rush. And so this team is falling apart in the fourth quarter, and we've given up 64 points. And I don't even know if that includes the San Francisco game. So, yeah, we got to tie it up because you opened up the game talking about the defense and, well, you know, we didn't have all our people. Every game this year, our defense has fallen apart in the fourth quarter. 64 points, guys. Peace.
All right, Drew. Straight to the point. Yeah. And look, and I think if there's a couple things you want to circle that you want to get better at, I think that's one of it. Eddie Goomba, Charlie's been crying today because the Giants didn't pick up Dwight Freeney. So that's what he was up. I guess that's Charlie's latest cause du jour, if you will. Frank Romanelli, can you guys please touch on the pick rule? I still can't wrap my head around it. How many times the Niners got away with it? That's one of the toughest calls for officials to make in the league. And it's not just the 49ers. Quite frankly, the Giants run pick plays. Every team in the NFL runs pick plays. Or as offensive coordinators like to call them, rub plays.
Yes.
Where you get in the way of the defensive back. They're just very hard to officiate. Unless it's obvious, it's very hard to call an offensive pass interference in those situations.
Well, they could come down and watch our basketball game tonight. I will be more than happy to show them how to set a screen without moving my feet.
Usually it's people setting screens for you.
No, but I also am not shying away from getting down and dirty with the big fellas.
People can jump over your screen.
Well,
so that's
they'd
problem.
Be called for a personal foul then.
let's see. Ben Gruen unhappy with the Giants' safeties and their hands, he thinks they've dropped some picks this year.
Well, Landon Collins had the drop. I mean, I don't know necessarily if that's a trend. I wouldn't go that far. I mean, there have been some missed opportunities in terms of takeaways, but I don't think that that's just necessarily to the safety group as a whole. I mean, the Landon Collins, it stands out because, hey, that's an opportunity to seal the game right there, but I don't see that being a trend each and every contest.
Dave from Rochester, this might be the most important Twitter question of the day. What will DeTino dress up for Halloween?
Well, you would know better. Isn't that the Saints game,
we're
correct?
We're in New Orleans.
Yes,
so
you're going to be in the Big Easy.
DeTino's going to hunker down. DeTino does not like New Orleans. Well, it's too busy. There's too many interesting people walking around. They get in the way of his speed walking. Seriously, that's like his least favorite city. He hates New Orleans.
He'll find a way, though.
I'm telling you.
He'll find a way to get the walk in.
He's worried about the folk that'll be out on Halloween Eve. All right, folks,
well,
we got to go.
They should be worried about him being
Well, that's absolutely true. They should have the pictures up. All right, we're at 105. We went a little long today. Thank you for joining us. For Lance Metal, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow it's Anita Marks and Jeff Feagles. Dave Spadar from PhiladelphiaEagles.com will be with us. Make sure you join us. Then, of course, Thursday is going to be press conference day today, folks. Remember, it's a Monday night game, so no practice, no coach on Wednesday. That comes your way Thursday at 11. For Lance, I'm John. Have a good one.
Have a good one.